Good morning.
Morning. Tim, I might be in your seat right now. I just realized that I'm in the commissioner's room. I'm at the middle table. So all of a sudden, I just feel so more insightful and just so much, you know, attuned with Rauch County. It's amazing.
You know, if you grab the gavel, it'll be kind of like the heavens open up and the sun shines on you, and there's harp music in the background. It's awesome.
I should expect little cherubs that will.
Yes.
Right. Okay. I had, Tim, my first mayor when I was in Grand County, Grand Lake. He, what a character he was. He would love to lean back in his chair, speaking of the gavel, and he would twist the gavel. That was his little kind of nervous. Oh. And what, unbeknownst to him, on one particularly really tough zoning issue, he was twisting the gavel so much that when he went to use it, it flew off. We had members that were ducking in the background. It was pretty humorous. Nobody heard.
Good morning.
Good morning, Beth. Among my bad habits, and I have a number of them, is the pen clicking thing.
Oh, we all know, Tim.
Yeah.
We hear it all the time.
Yeah, and it's hard to control. And it drove Commissioner Hermosinski absolutely insane. She literally confronted me several times to ask me just to stop doing that. So
it drives me crazy too, Tim, but I just let it go.
Oh, God. Thank you for your
support. I'm asking Kendra to buy you non-clicking pens for Christmas.
All right. We are all assembled, I believe. No reason that we cannot get started. So we've got 30 minutes of COVID-19 work session time. I don't have anything particular for COVID. I have another item I'd like to talk about, but
I have one thing. This is just a question for Robin. Robin, I'm curious if you, I'm sure you have seen, but I'm curious whether you think we want to incorporate, you know, the WHO came out with these three, you know, we have our five commitments, but they have the three things to avoid, the three C's. It's like crowded places, close contact, and something else with a C. I just didn't know if you thought that made sense to incorporate into our messaging. I think it's good and sort of addresses how we had talked about, you know, our five commitments don't really address that idea of like group gatherings. So just wanted to throw that out as an idea.
Sure. Happy to put that in the newsletter this week that goes out later today. I'll look it up on the WHO. Yeah.
Yeah. See what you think. It just seemed like it could add to our messaging. You know, we have our five commitments plus three things to avoid.
Right. And one of the other things, I guess I wanted to share with you was that I sent you the survey, and I would, depending on what you think about the timing, would love to get your feedback. I'd love to start it next week, or we could start it the first week of August. I added, I don't know if you've gotten a chance to look at it. I added questions about the flu shot. And if there was a vaccine, I kind of wanted to gauge whether people are planning to get their flu shots. And if there was a vaccine, if they'd actually take that. And I actually could probably create a question based on those three WHO things as well and add that to that. But getting your feedback today would be great if that's possible, so we could get that out. And I don't know if you remember what we did last time, is that when you go to the website, there's just a little box that pops up that you have to fill out that, you don't have to, but it prompts you to fill out that survey. And then I could put it in the newsletter and then on social media, because I would say we got a pretty great return in 2 weeks. We had over 800 people, which is pretty good for Steamboat. And then Kara Stoller from the chamber asked me to differentiate a question. So I changed. She was curious how people are comfortable eating outdoors versus indoors. So I kind of made those two questions. So if I could get feedback on that today, that would be awesome.
I have a few things, and I can, it's probably easiest if I just send those to you in writing, just a couple comments. Specifically, there were just a few questions, and maybe the restaurant one is a good example of this, where it might make more sense to do kind of a Likert scale versus a yes, no on multiple questions. So I'll just send you a couple of thoughts that maybe you can incorporate. Only big thing is last time we had several questions that I felt like kind of got at the concept of economic security. And I noted that, you sent that email and said, I think maybe I wasn't clear on what I didn't necessarily want a question about the extra $600, but I wanted answers to those questions about economic security after people stop receiving this extra $600, if that makes sense. It felt like maybe there weren't really as many questions getting at that in this survey. So maybe just looking back at the other survey and thinking about some comparison questions, I really want to have a finger on the pulse of just kind of how people are feeling and reacting. And I don't know if it's mental health, economic security, maybe a little of both. But if you could just think about what kind of questions would help us understand that piece, I would appreciate that.
So may I just ask a clarifying question on that? Is that I guess I had taken some of those out just because I'm thinking about what can the county do about it? So I guess the question is yes, for you to be better informed. But at the same time, I'm thinking, okay, if you have that information, what can the county implement to help people? So that was just my challenge, but I'm happy to add more of those about if you're trying to reach an answer of economic security. I think we could ask a couple of questions. I'd be curious, the other commissioners, are there other things on the economic you're really interested in finding out?
I'd be careful about asking a question that suggested that there were specific actions that the county commissioners could take.
Well, right. Yeah. That's what I don't have any. My question was why I had less questions about economic security because the commissioners can't do that much about it. So.
Yeah, that's a good point. But I think Beth's point is well taken. It would be good to know because, again, as we've talked our way through this, we've gotten all kinds of feedback and information from the business community, but it's been hard to understand what's really happening with people, the worker bees, and the challenges that they have not working, as the case may be.
Okay, I'll add some questions on that. I have the other survey, so I can we can just repeat some of those that we did before.
So where's the list, and who's this going out to? And again, so I guess is it going to be sending out to our residents or people that live here, and or some? I guess what I'm trying to drive at here is that, you know, if this was going out to the chambers list or something, you know, we probably ought to ask a few tourist related questions or second homeowner type questions again, like how comfortable do you feel coming to Steamboat Springs, you know, so those kind of things too, maybe. So I know if you're not a resident or whatever, so I'm just throwing that out there because seems like people must be pretty comfortable coming here because sounds like I haven't been to town for 2 weeks. So, but it sounds like
there's a lot of people, Doug.
A lot of people.
A lot of people. A lot of licensed.
You know, so I guess we could get a little feedback, you know, about from that lot of people that are coming in here if we had a way to get out to them to answer those questions. They'll not necessarily be the same questions that we're asking our full-time residents and the rest about their jobs and life and all that stuff.
Right. Well, it goes, I mean, essentially it goes to whoever like visits our website or follows our social media, it will go out to, we have a fair amount of second home. I mean, we don't have them tagged, but every time somebody sends a question, whether it's a business person or a second homeowner, I ask if they want to be on our community newsletter list, and they say, usually they say yes. So we have it's a mix. But what I create when I did the questions, they're not required that people have to answer them to keep moving forward. So we can do for those questions, like, are you comfortable visiting Steamboat Springs? We can have an NA, for people that are not visitors, that are residents. So I can add a couple of those as well. And maybe I'll talk to Kara if there's anything else that the chamber would like to know that would be helpful for them.
You know, the other thing is, so I guess, we talked about it during our last two Board of Health meetings, is our residents going outside and whether we should have a question in there. Have you visited outside? And
we have that.
You did in there, yes. So, but I don't know, just make sure, just asking whether you followed the five. Yeah, you did ask that too, whether you followed the five C's commitment.
Yeah. Okay. Well, this is great feedback. I will add some more questions on economic security. and then, maybe some tourist questions that would be helpful. Thank you. Thank you for the feedback.
Mark, congratulations on securing a new public health director. Good work. Glad to see that you got that done. And she's ready to start on Monday. Is that correct?
Tim, that is correct. As I mentioned in my email to the commissioners, we reached consensus on compensation and all our arrangements going forward in terms of the employment conditions. And Roberta is now traveling back from Idaho. She'll be in the area by probably Sunday and ready for duty on Monday. So we're really excited and very, very, very pleased that we've gotten somebody of her caliber and her enthusiasm to come on board with us. So that's where we're just very excited to have her part of the Routt County team. I was going to fill in a couple more details if I could, Tim, but just for a few minutes. I know there have been some concerns expressed about, since we've got a little bit of a gap between late today, close of business Friday, and until Roberta's on board by Monday morning. And that's something that we've been working very diligently on. In fact, I was a little late for our call this morning as we were downstairs visiting with the contract nurses and Estella in the public health office. And we feel confident that we not only have onboard coverage here with our contract nurses, but we also have want to share that we now have seven contact tracers that are on board that have been hired by Routt County. You know that we want to get to nine, but we have seven now that are onboarded and now in that capacity for Routt County Public Health. Additionally, thanks to the efforts of both Michelle and Carrie, we have some backup coverage that's being provided to us by CDPHE personnel that will take place over this weekend. I'll shout out to Robin. She's gonna man the phone line on Saturday, our main line that comes in, because we don't wanna leave that unattended. We don't have somebody specifically identified for Sunday, but I'm sure we'll have that within the next few hours and have that taken care of as well. So I know we've got a transitional piece here as we move into the docking station, but we feel that with what has been set up and put in place that we're going to be in good condition for Roberta's arrival on Monday. Tim, we've also got solidified the field trip that is going to be at 1:30 on Monday. And I think you probably received an invitation from Julie.
I did.
And so we've got several people that are going to take place in that. And I'll just say that I think you'll be very impressed with the spaces you'll look at, the one in particular. And boy, as you go downstairs and you see, as we've got everybody wedged into that planning department, I just say it really reinforces what I think is the need to put them in a very workable space going forward to do their best work for us. And those are the pieces that I wanted to cover, Tim. I'm certainly happy to answer questions that commissioners may have at this time.
I'm curious. So the staffing for the public health department now, or when we get done with our current hiring spree, will be 9 contact tracers, a public health director, a public health nurse, an epidemiologist, and an admin. And then, of course, in addition to that, our contract nurses. Do I have that about right?
Tim, you have it exactly correct.
13 full-time Rouse County employees, plus how many contract nurses?
4 contract nurses, Tim.
And I'm sorry, I didn't mean to say full-time, because obviously all of the contact tracers are not full-time.
Right, you bet.
It could be, but
right.
They're not necessarily full-time.
You bet. And I think the uniqueness of the building space that you'll see, Tim, on Monday is the fact that we've got what I would call flex space in the rear of the building, that we've got a really generous bullpen area where not only can we have supply, but we can set up multiple stations. And again, I think we can all understand that, and again, with proper social distancing, it really is valuable to have a lot of those people to be able to interface and talk with one another about their ongoing efforts and make sure that we've got, again, a team effort going forward. And I think that space in particular lends itself to that. Let me back up for a second in terms of you talking about personnel, Tim. One of the positions you mentioned was the epidemiologist. We are waiting for Roberta to be on board next week so that she's here to be involved directly in those interviews with epidemiology candidates. I believe we've got a total of 8 right now that we'll walk through there. The nurse, Michelle, stepping down and resigning from the position to pursue other career pursuits, we have that now advertised and that's on the street. So that will close in, I believe it's now about a week and a half. And that'll be the next order of business in terms of onboarding somebody in that particular capacity.
Great. Thank you for that update. And I know we haven't probably geared up as quickly as some people might have liked, but it feels to me like we are gearing up about as fast as we could have under the circumstances.
So are we going to have time with Roberta? I mean, not that we need her on Monday. She's probably going to be drinking from the fire hose anyhow. So, as soon as we can get her in here, it would be good to have the conversation with her as well. So, and again,
Wednesday would be a good time.
Yeah, but I think we need to make sure we channel our discussion topics a little bit too. So, we still have to go over this, public health educator and then concept of that. And
I'll be right back. I'm
struggling with maybe we only have budgeted 1 nurse. And isn't that correct? We only just have the 1 nurse other than the contract nurses. So, I don't want to be micromanaging like I normally do, but anyhow, so I don't want to be doing that. And hopefully she'll come up with some ideas that, because I'm trading off the concept of, well, we need a public health educator and whatever versus having a second nurse or something like that too for coverage. And so what would be better? And then she needs to tell us that. But I guess we'll have an opportunity to ask those questions and go from there. So,
yeah, Doug, you're exactly right. You're spot on. We didn't want to jump the gun and begin to bring some people on board. Once we knew Roberta was going to be joining us, we felt, hey, we want her right on the front lines telling us what she feels some of the most critical positions are and what are going to be the most value to public health now and into the future. So that's why we want to make sure that we get her very important feedback. And that's why I think, Doug, again, it's, as we've talked about, let's see if health educators are the most important positions in her mind and in her professional opinion, or do we need maybe an additional full-time nurse? Is that going to be of more value to us going forward? So we will absolutely be examining that. The other thing that is good news, as you know from our conversations in the last 24 hours, is we've now got seven individuals from the city of Steamboat Springs who have stepped forward to assist us with both our testing activities and also our education monitoring and compliance. So that's another, some more bench strength that really, quite frankly, a week ago, we didn't think we had. So that's good news, and that can be deployed, and that can help us in this ongoing effort.
We must have lost our chair, must have had to go outside.
Okay. You guys, I'm here. I have my cars in the shop and they just called me. So I'm on the phone with them. So apologies for trying to multitask here, but everything sounds good. Was there a specific question?
No, I think we were just continuing. We were continuing to get an update from Mark on.
Sounds good. I don't have any other questions, but my apologies that I need to take care of this car issue real quick here.
You bet. Well, we could time out for a minute till Tim gets back in here too. So
that'd be great. I think I'll just be about three more minutes.
You bet. And Beth, okay. By the way, I have not received in my email inbox anything from CDPHE on the variants yet.
So, Doug, just FYI, Jill texted me yesterday and said, I have some things I need to communicate with you guys about your variants. Who should I send them to? And I was like, send it to Mark, I guess. So I don't know what that is. I don't know if that's our restaurant variants, if it's our variants request. So stand by. And I just flagged that for Mark. Okay, I'll finish this phone call. I'll be right back.
That sounds good.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah. We'll be temporarily paused here for everybody that's listening.
I can fill some time here up with some administrative issues. Deanna, I got your email about next Wednesday's agenda item. This is concerning a planning item. I guess my recommendation, because it's most likely that the planning department sent out APOs for that hearing at 1:30 and provided notice. APOs means adjacent property owner notices. Because they likely did that, I'm going to suggest something inconvenient, and I recognize that. But I think the board can go ahead and table it at their scheduled time, 10:30 or 10:50, whatever you told me. But then somebody be available, either Deanna, Kendra, or anybody else. I'm not volunteering, but anybody else be available at that scheduled time of 1:30 in case anybody comes online based on their notice, and then they can simply be told what had occurred, that the item got tabled and to which specific date it got tabled to. I know that's burdensome, but I don't know how we address the notice issue other than that.
That sounds like a good solution, Eric. Thank you.
So Mark, while we're waiting here, so I guess I want to follow up on the weekend coverage in a little bit more. And again, this morning on the recovery team meeting, you know, there was still some concern of making sure, you know, that somebody was going to, that specifically somebody, some person, warm-blooded thing was going to be checking in on Carrie's the landlines that she and Michelle Lewis had. So I guess want to make sure that somebody is doing that, because evidently she's going to put a message on hers to ask everybody to call Carrie's landline, which will be public health's landline. And then it sounds like, Robin, you were going to follow up on Saturday and be in answering those. So I guess just want to make sure that we have somebody, some warm body.
Yeah, Emmy started an email chain. Mark is on it as well. Just Carrie and Michelle are making sure that all the messages go to her main number, and that's the her landline desk number, and that's the I'll check it in intervals on Saturday, and then we just need to find somebody to do it on Sunday.
You know, I was just thinking, I don't know why we couldn't just put COVID on hold for a couple of days, you know, and so we just won't have more cases for 2 days, and we're not going to answer the phone. Everybody's on vacation. Everybody's gone. The world stopped for the 2 days.
Well, I don't want to jinx anything, but I have spent a lot of time with Dr. Harrington and Carrie on the phone on the weekend since this has started, so...
Can I make a suggestion, please? Since the start of all of this, folks have been leaving messages at various places and not following the direction of the message that they get. Typically, they'll call Carrie and be told, call somewhere else or go to the website, but then they end up leaving a message anyway. And then Carrie typically would forward that to the JIC at the time, or Scott or me to follow up on. And then they would go to the website or make a call somewhere else. And we were all chasing those tails. I would suggest shutting that voice message system down and directing them to call a specific line where only one person is then responding rather than three or four of us. There were several times when I returned a message, a call, because it was forwarded to me by Carrie, and they said, yeah, I already talked to so-and-so, and that got a little frustrating and waste of resources in my mind.
So this is Kathy, and I guess, Robin, I want to hear more about what you're talking about, because I keep getting, even up until last night, questions about where Michelle and Carrie's emails should get forwarded to, and you know what they should be doing with their calls. And last night we talked about, or Scott Kalman had recommended county info at Colorado Route County US, and I don't even know what that email address is and if it's specific to public health, but everybody seems to have a point of view on this, and I'm worried that different people are doing different things. So I would love to hear what's happening, Robin, and what your perspective is.
I can say, so Deanna monitors the county info at Co-Route Co-US, and that has been mainly for, I would say, business owners and individuals asking questions about the mask order and whether kids from 2 to 10 have to wear a mask. So it's not a public health. It's just anyone asking questions. So we get a steady stream of questions. Scott gets emails, primarily from restaurants and bars. But I've been assisting Scott because it's a lot to answer those questions. Sometimes Carrie has forwarded, just like what Eric was saying, she has forwarded emails to me, you know, anything from site mitigation protocols at the emergency center, just a variety of people that call public health. So we've tried to streamline it. We got rid of the phone number, the call line one, because we had thought that we had gotten rid of the voicemail, of kind of like what Eric was talking about, but we hadn't. And then we had a backlog like 6 weeks ago, and Deanna did a lot of work and I did a lot of work of answering those phone calls. But as far as public health, that's different. So I don't know. I know environmental health has its own email address, like it's e.h@c.route.co. CDUS, but I don't know about public health. I don't know what's the answer. I just volunteered to answer on Saturday, before Roberta comes online, to if there's any emergencies that happen over the weekend, so I'd be able to reach Mo or whomever if we need to do something on Saturday.
Can I just throw in my two cents on this whole conversation? I feel like we're overly complicating it because we're talking about who's going to receive these emails for the next 2 days. And really all that's needed is someone to receive them and distribute them appropriately. I think. Am I wrong about that? Mark is nodding. So I just don't think that it warrants as much discussion as it's had. Somebody just needs to volunteer to receive those emails and figure out where they need to go for 2 days. Yeah, and then it'll be Roberta's responsibility.
It may also be an opportunity to clean up our process and our system, so we're not all responding to various things. And I don't know, there doesn't seem to be a whole lot of collaboration, and I don't mean that negatively. I just think our process could be cleaned up a little bit.
Well, I didn't know if there was a group email account that it would make sense for IT to create for some of these for under these circumstances.
Can I suggest that we're in the weeds and that I think you guys should figure this out. I mean, I hear Eric saying there's a concern here that needs to be addressed. I think it's ridiculous for the commissioners to be involved in trying to figure it out.
Yeah, I didn't want to solve it either. I just want to make sure that, because there was some concern this morning in the in the recovery group, and just making sure that we're identified. And then Mark's gone Monday and Tuesday too, so. So I just wanted to make sure everybody knew that we're delegating somebody. We're delegating Robin to work on, to do this on Saturday. But anyhow, we just want to make sure everybody knows
I totally agree with you, Doug. And I would give a thumbs up to you all getting a better system in order if this system is not working. I don't think we should be involved in figuring that out. I see Tim talking, and it's sort of pleasant that you listen to him.
I guess I had to unmute myself. I was really feeling left out. The chairperson is going to insert himself into this conversation, and we're going to move on to our 10 o'clock item with the jail-based behavioral services contract. And I see that Lieutenant Boyle is on the line. Joe, would you like to present this item to us, please?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yep. And we can see you too, Joe.
All right. So this is the just the renewal of the jail-based behavioral contract that we have with the Office of Behavioral Health. They increased the amount of the contract from 85 to 103.5. So we got a lot more money coming in for this, and it's just to continue these services and hopefully make more recovery support services for inmates in the custody that could benefit from this contract here. So just wanted to keep moving forward and see what we could do to keep this program active in our county jail to make sure that we're supplying these inmates with the best recovery support services we can to reduce the recidivism in our county.
Where's the money coming from, Joe?
It's coming from the Office of Behavioral Health. It's the state. So, and they've actually made it a lot easier this year. Last year, we didn't spend nearly as much that was given to us because there were some pretty heavy restrictions on where the money was allocated to and how you could use it. This year, they've made it a lot easier to move that money around where you need it as you see fit. And I've been working with really closely with the Office of Behavioral Health, and the university actually has reached out to me to see what kind of support they could lend us and how we could better use these funds. So we do have a scope of work and some good ideas that we're looking at, some subcontractors that we're going to look into for a MAT program. I've been working with the Health Partnership too as well, and they have some great ideas for recovery support services. So I'm really excited about it and excited to keep moving forward and supporting the community the best I can.
Questions and comments for Lieutenant Boyle.
So has Eric reviewed this?
He has, and I do believe he had some questions for me.
I've resolved those questions, Lieutenant Boyle. They were surrounding insurance requirements. Okay. I'm satisfied that we can meet those requirements.
Okay. And Joel Miller with the Office of Behavioral Health has, he's really confident and assured me that this money has been moved more into from a grant to more of like a statutorily set aside money. So he said this money is not going anywhere anytime soon. If anything, he said it's only going to increase over the years.
So I don't have any other questions about it, Joe. So I guess I'm definitely support it. You know, as we ever get past this COVID thing, you ought to come back and give us a report on all the activities that you're doing with it and how it's really making it out, making it into this jail and helping and, you know, some of the, you know, we're short of naming people and the rest, but how it's helping and how, you know, just from your eyes, would be good even just to see, you know, because sooner or later we're going to be asked or somebody's going to be asked to support either more of it or, you know, when, you know, especially in the state's continuing budget decline and the rest and priorities. So we want to make sure we have some good evidentiary information that we can share on our part. So anyhow, would be my comments, Joe. Thank you.
Sure. Absolutely. And this whole COVID thing has definitely thrown a wrench in the system a little bit with, you know, our one subcontractor, Craig Thornhill, who does substance use disorder group therapy. Obviously we can't have large groups gathering in our jail for anything. So, he's been, unable to perform his services as of late because of this whole COVID thing. And we've been trying to navigate that and see what different ways we could still have him participate, if it's one-on-one counseling through video or something, but there's definitely some obstacles that we need to overcome with this COVID thing and the JBBS program.
I think the comments I would make is just a thank you to you, Lieutenant Boyle. I think you've been really proactive in thinking about these things in a progressive way and trying to provide mental health supports and prevent recidivism. I mean, I think it remains a challenge that many people who need mental health services end up in jail instead of somewhere else. And I think you have been really a model for how to try to be proactive on these things and do what we can. So I just want to thank you for that. I think it's really impressive and fully supportive of us doing what we can in this arena.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Nicely said, Commissioner Melton, and I echo those comments. Having said that, I'm not sensing a lot of resistance to this initiative. Maybe someone could offer a motion to support this.
Yeah. So, Mr. Chair, I move that we approve and authorize your signature on the amended JBBS contract between Brown County Sheriff's Office and the Office of Behavioral Health.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any more discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
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 Aye. Lieutenant Boyle, thank you very much for your work. Have a great day.
You too. And how does it, is this contract going to be signed electronically? And then I'm just trying to figure out, how do I send it back to the Office of Behavioral Health after it's signed?
Talk to Kendra offline.
Okay.
Thank you. Great.
Thank you, sir. Thank you. Take care.
All right, Kara Stoller, are you with us this morning?
I am.
There you are. So, Kara, thank you for joining us. And
thank you, guys.
We look forward to your update on the work of the industry group.
Thank you for that. We do have a lot of people that are going to chime in and provide very brief updates, so we'll try to keep it as quick as possible. I wanted to start out with thanking all the commissioners for your time today and just acknowledging your proactive outreach to hear an update from all of the industry work groups. We really appreciate it. Quick reminder, a few months ago, we stood up additional industry sector work groups. We saw the value from those working in the industry, our team, and elected officials such as yourselves to have discussions on current protocol and challenges, and also to brainstorm creative solutions to help everyone weather this storm. So we thank you for participating in these groups. It's been super helpful for you all to be at the table and directly hear those challenges and potential support, as well as answer questions and provide clarification and like directly. It's been a tremendous support and just a nod of what an amazing community that we have and how well we all can work together. So with that, as I mentioned, we have 14 work group updates to share today. I will be sharing a handful on behalf of some of the work groups, but we also have a number of reps from those individual work groups that will be here today to provide you an update. And of course, if there's anything that you want to dive into further, we can continue the conversation at a later time. With that, I'm going to kick it off with an outdoor rec update. That's Outdoor Recreation Products and Gear Companies Industry Work Group. So I'm presenting on behalf of Lib Diamond from Point Six. Point Six, Smart Wool, Grass Sticks, Inside Out Communications, and Chamber staff participated with this group. And their conversations focused on two key questions. How are local outdoor rec companies responding to COVID-19 impacts? You know, what's the state of the industry locally? And can we identify short and long-term needs that could support growth and retention from the business community, from that industry? First, the companies discussed how quickly they moved to working remotely for management teams and office staff, similar with so many other industries. And on the production side of businesses, there have been issues, as you can imagine, with supply chain, stopping and starting production, among other issues across our operations. Largely, a lot of that is outside our local scope and control. On other local, larger global changes, consumers have changed their how they purchase significantly over the last few months, and there's a lot more direct-to-consumer sales happening, which has led to challenges in fulfillment, maintaining the channel of distribution, flowing smoothly with that increased demand, while also trying to ensure the health and safety of employees at their warehouses and distribution centers. Across the board, customer service and responsiveness has been critical to these companies, working to, again, keep that customer in good communication and keep their staff just at the forefront, making sure they have everything that they need. I want to note, as you guys know, there have been a lot of efforts from certainly a number of industries, but also the OREC companies to support our community with direct donations and giving support response efforts, which is really appreciated by so many. One area that's important to keep an eye on is that as business has shifted and cost-cutting measures in place, that includes cutting back on service contracts with professional service providers. So some additional indirect impacts are happening, you know, ranging from legal services to marketing services and more. It's a good thing to keep in mind. And there is one bright spot for the OREC industries. Lots of people are turning to outdoor pursuits and are in need of gear and products. So it's an opportunity for new and growing customer bases. The second item, identifying short and long-term needs that the OREC businesses could use from our community. They all agreed that the long-term strategy of the Economic Development Council and community supporting remote workers that work in the OREC industry is really important. We do need to know, though, what those needs are and make sure that we engage and support them. That includes, you know, broadband, air service, networking, et cetera. They also encourage to continue organizing local outdoor rec industry coalition to make sure that there's a joint voice that's heard locally. And then want to support the Yampa Valley Entrepreneurship Center to make sure that entrepreneurial activities, new ideas and business have the opportunity to take off. And lastly, they did not see the need to meet continually, but as needs come up, they will certainly regroup and huddle moving forward. With that, we're gonna shift over to construction, and we have Todd Carr, as you all know, with the Route County Building Department. Todd? Do we have you on?
Yeah. Morning, everyone. Todd Carr, how are you? It's going to provide just a brief verbal update on the construction industry working group. We haven't met since last May. We decided to postpone our next meeting till early August to give us a better reference of how the construction industry is faring. And then also I'd probably have our budget done by that point so we could kind of review projections for 2021 as well. With that being said, the construction industry overall has weathered fairly well through the economic COVID-19 related recessions. Residential construction continues to be extremely busy, probably a little busier than projected, specifically with smaller projects, interior alterations, remodels, additions, and decks, and then roof replacements, windows, things of that nature. Those numbers have increased farther beyond what we would have projected last year. Some of that is maybe related to the Fed's pushing rates down to an all-time low. I think we see a lot of refinancing going on right now. You could probably gather that information from the banking industry. So people are probably pulling some equity out and able to take on some projects as well due to rates being low. To date, the building department revenue is down approximately $200,000 at the end of June compared to June of 19. However, we did make some internal changes in the building department that account for roughly $90,000 of that decrease due to offering contractors the option of producing a value of work to be permitted. The rest of that is really lack of large commercial new projects to date. So commercial construction, at least new and large projects, has been pretty much put on pause or hold. Now, many of those projects, talking to contractors and professionals that are involved in those projects, they haven't been canceled, but they're definitely put on hold till 2021 to see how the economy is doing. Those projects would be downtown, the new boutique hotel, some projects up around Ski Times Square, and then of course the Ski Corp canceled all their projects this calendar year as well. To date, since January 1st to today, we've seen 33 new building permit applications come in the door. 10 of those are single family homes. Out of those 10, seven of those new homes are out in Route County. Two of those new homes are within the city of Steamboat Springs, and one of those is within the town of Hayden. We've seen two commercial new buildings come in since July 1st. One of those is in Route County. It's a storage building. And one of those is in Steamboat Springs, which is another storage building. Currently, for commercial projects under review, we have two live-work buildings, one up on Airport Drive and another one on Copper Ridge. Both, I believe, four-unit mixed-use live-work storage buildings. Good news is was talking to Jason Peasley with the Yampa Valley Housing Authority this week through communications. So it does appear they're attempting to try to get Sunlight Crossings to move forward yet. We've reviewed that back this spring, and that's been sitting in the permit application pile. It's been approved. So he's working with his lenders and finances there to get that project moving. So that'd be great to see that start yet this year. Other possible projects related to residential within the city of Steamboat Springs is Wild Horse area. Next to the tennis bubble, there's some townhomes that have been proposed for a while, about 36 units there. So we'll wait and see what happens on that. And then urban street development, there's a fourplex that's under review that could move forward yet. And Yampa Street behind Natural Grocers as well. I think that's probably a project maybe we're hoping to see some movement on in 2021 or late this year. For next year, you know, trying to project revenues and what we're seeing right now, new homes within the city is kind of up in the air, dependent upon a few things. One, I mentioned the townhomes over at the Wild Horse and Urban Street. Sunlight Phase 3 has lots available, but we won't be able to actually permit those until the city finishes the water tank project, which is set to begin construction this August, but probably won't be completed till late next fall. I believe there's 15 lots in Phase 3 of Sunlight. Then we have Overlook, a large property that was approved finally through the planning and development process with the city. That one's hard to say. That's probably more of a potential for sale property, looking for someone to take it over at this point and run with the development. So even if somebody was to purchase and move forward, it's probably we're going to see infrastructure development next year at best, not any building permits within that subdivision. With that, that's pretty much all I got for an update. I'm happy to answer any questions to this point.
Thanks, Todd. Really appreciate it. Next up, we have Jeff Pettis representing the Real Estate Industry Group, and Jeff is with Colorado Group Realty. Jeff?
Morning, all. Real estate has pretty much recovered since the industry was shut down as a whole for about 45 days. We are down in terms of total transactions and total volume year over year, but we're coming back in a big way. The month of June saw an almost record-setting number of transactions go under contract, with about 132 properties that went under contract in June. Home prices are up, both in terms of single family homes as well as condos. And that's due to a multitude of effects that are pretty interesting that I'm happy to share with you. But I think the punchline is we think the county is doing a good job in terms of, you know, its regulations as far as real estate is concerned. And our group, which was comprised of real estate related professionals, inspectors, appraisers, lenders, titles, and realtors, we think things are going fine. And so we've kind of put our group on hold for the time being and sit at the ready in case we feel the need to meet again. You guys have any questions?
I just have a quick question, Jeff. Did the state ever change that rule where you guys have to wear gloves for open houses?
They did. And so the two things that really aren't occurring anymore. First of all, we don't have to wear gloves, which we as a group thought was kind of silly to begin with. But we do have to wear masks and sanitize our hands and surfaces when we go for showings. Open houses are still not being allowed, but the industry continues to move.
Thanks. I agree that rule didn't make any sense.
Well, I guess
for questions in case any other ones pop up, and thanks to Commissioner Monger for participating in our group as well.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jeff. Next up, I am presenting on behalf of the Gym and Health Club group that was led by Stephanie Orozco at Old Town Hot Springs. And this update was provided by Sandy Fallon, the owner of Rakta Yoga Studio. So for a handful of studios in town, most of them opened the second week of June with small numbers, you know, limited to 8 to 9, which is approximately 20 to 25% of their capacity. each studio put into place, screenings, temperature checks, asking questions, making sure that sanitizer and hand washing was available right at the door. The mask variants seemed to really help this industry, as masks were being worn until they like got onto the mat or to their equipment and then removed. Old Town Hot Springs saw their numbers increase when their guests did not have to wear the masks while exercising. Clients were spaced at least 7 to 8 feet apart, and for the yoga studios, modified their techniques to make sure that they were trying to, you know, minimize those, the breathing techniques and all that. So all the studios do either have doors or windows, which were providing ample air ventilation and still are. Rakta has an air exchange system, which also runs during class. Most of the clients are locals. However, the 2 weeks around July 4th holiday, they saw an influx of visitors to their studios. Out Here actually chose to close for a week because they felt it was really overwhelming to screen and limit the visitors. And they have a really successful online platform, so it was easy for them to transition to virtual classes. Others tried to, you know, call and contact the out-of-town visitors and screen them and ask for a minimum of 2 weeks in Steamboat before coming to a class, which certainly was a challenge to navigate. The responses to that where people were really hoping to be able to participate. The new mask ordinance, they've all seen numbers fall back down pretty dramatically this last week. People just don't seem to want to wear a mask while exercising. Some have been able to take their exercises outside, installed AstroTurf so that people can be outside on decks. But obviously, these are short-term solutions, and when the temperature changes, that just won't be feasible. Economically, the fitness industry is really getting crushed. Operating at 25% capacity, being designated in the high-risk activity, and now wearing a mask has really impacted all of their businesses quite a bit. The entire industry is looking at going towards online programs, and Sandy just received a report that 59% of people surveyed in the US will not renew fitness memberships and have determined that they can do things at home or online. So most industries, maybe not everyone, as we've just heard with construction and real estate, but this one is an industry that's been hit really hard and struggling to see where things will go moving forward. But with that, next up, we have our personal services work group led by John Cardillo, the owner of Rocky Mountain Day Spa. John?
Good morning, everybody. Thanks for taking the time to listen. Can everybody hear me? I'm operating correctly? Okay. So I'm representing myself as well as, in particular, Life Essentials Day Spa. They were the only other organization in our group that kind of participated, along with Sarah Konopka from the Chamber and Angelica Salinas. We met a handful of times in early days, like leading up to May 1 and then a little bit into June. We were allowed to reopen as a spa on May 1st. With some limitations on what we could do. What we spent our time working on as a work group was pushing for a variance to allow us to provide all of our services. And the girls, Sarah and Angelica, were super helpful in that. We were right on the cusp of kind of proposing a variance based on another county when DORA, the Department of Regulation, with the state, came out with some more direction for us that allowed us to provide virtually all of our services with some additional protocols. So since May 1st, we've been open. And I'll speak a little bit for Cassandra as well down at Life Essentials. I think it's almost identical. We're down 50%, in May, 50% in June, a little over 50%. July has been a bit of a rally. We predicted that it would be busy. Folks are anxious to get in and personal services, stuff that locals want to get done all the time, whether it's haircuts or waxing and stuff like that. But spa savvy clients are really coming in. People that get massage regularly, enjoy massage, understand the risks and the pros and the cons. We've employed a number of protocols around here, including all of our staff is screened every single morning with a series of health screening questions, forehead temperatures. All of that is logged. We do that with our clients as well. That's done on paper when they arrive, and then it's all transcribed into our booking system. So it'd be very easy for any kind of contact tracing. We have emails, phone numbers, that sort of thing. It's a fairly controlled environment. Everybody has to have a reservation. You know, part of the reason we are down, of course, was demand in June, May and June, and then also we're having to put additional time between our services. Normally, we would have a 15-minute turnover for our staff to turn a room over. We've increased that to 30 minutes, which we agree with. It's limiting. We do additional cleaning. We've added 5 air purifiers to the space. We employ separation throughout unless people are together. So we're really vigilant about that. The end of every day and any time during the day when we can have all doors and windows open with still maintaining the comfort of our clients, we do that so we can create some good airflow. And at the very least, at the end of the day, everything gets opened up while we're closing. Let's see. Of course, everybody's wearing masks, clients and staff. It's required. When a person is getting a facial, that client is allowed to remove their mask, but our esthetician, our skincare provider, has to wear a mask and a face shield. So we do that. I think that's it. Like with regard to protocols and things like that we're doing to be proactive. Some of the challenges that we're having, which I bet others will echo in our industry and maybe Nick in particular with restaurants where you've got lots of staff and interaction, in particular with our industry, it can't be contactless. I put out an ad for some therapists that had arms that were 6 feet long to see if we could get a few of those in and create that space, but I didn't have much luck. But kidding aside, you know, our industry, we touch, you know, and so we're just doing our best to mitigate all risks. We want to stay open. I've told this to a number of people. We'll stay open at 50% if we have to for a longer period of time. Rather than experiencing another close down would be really, really difficult. One of the things that we'd love to see improve, of course, and I know this is probably preaching to the choir and you've heard this from everybody, is in quicker results on testing would be obviously great for everybody. We have gotten tested by the county a couple of times as a team, which I think has been really helpful, created some confidence, created some baselines. But as everybody knows, you know, as soon as you walk out from getting a test, you know, it's not necessarily valid after that unless you get a result right away. So that's where we see the biggest need, access to testing and quicker turnaround on results. I think that's all I've got currently.
Thanks, John.
Yeah, of course.
We have Kathy Elliott with Christy Sports, and she has been leading our retail industry work group. Kathy?
Good morning. Thank you to Commissioner Melton for sitting with us on our committee. The retail industry has had its fair share of struggles throughout COVID with the lockdown. They had positive sales for June. We're very reliant on the restaurant industry. So with the restaurants being able to expand outside, offer more opportunities, we've seen
Kathy, I think you went on mute by accident.
Sorry about that. 4th of July really impacted our downtown businesses by not having the parade and other activities downtown. We have been meeting on a weekly basis and then have gone to every 2 weeks and then depending on if we need to meet on a weekly basis. But we've been going strong since May. July sales have seen a steady increase. Numbers are moving well. The interesting thing is that we're not able to see really any trends. One day it's quiet. The next day we've had great sales, but everyone is remaining optimistic. August tends to be the strongest month for the summer season moving forward. But the industry, you know, if there was an uptick in cases and a potential shutdown, it could be catastrophic for the retail businesses. So we're working on being creative, coming up with different ideas that would allow us to apply for some variances to be able to keep open, whether it's curbside, online sales, what have you. We're trying to really think outside the box. Every retail business is a little bit different in what they can and can't do. And a lot of our downtown shops are relying on customers just kind of walking in. Safety protocols are in place. We're very comfortable with it. Staff sizes are small. We're running into the same problems as most of the restaurant industry and other industries, is that staffing is small. So we can't afford to have any members getting sick. So the face mask is very positive for the retail businesses. Moving forward, we're remaining optimistic and positive with the number of second homeowners that are currently in town. And we're kind of hearing rumblings that they're wanting to stay, especially if national schools are going online again, that they're wanting to stay, which would allow us to have hopefully a stronger fall season that's normally slower to help us ramp up and get into up for ski season. We're working together to help protect each other to survive and using ideas that may be working for one business that could benefit another one. Concerns with manufacturing is a big issue right now. Most companies were able to adjust their summer buys a little bit. They're selling out and are struggling to get products replenished from those manufacturers. We're finding great success with smaller manufacturing getting replenished, but larger manufacturing is an issue. And there are concerns with borders being closed and with China being able to get that winter product in time for the skiing industry. This is our biggest challenge. It occurred once COVID shut us down, is rent reductions. We've learned that 30% of the downtown commercial business space is now owned by outside corporations, and they're not willing to work with our retailers in getting some rent reduced, especially for April and May. Any locally owned businesses were very welcoming to work with their tenants to help them survive to get through that. But there are concerns that a slower fall season, it will impact them, especially if the rents cannot be reduced. We're hearing that once leasing is up, that some of these outside corporations are wanting to raise the rent and hold the tenants into long-term leasing. So we're going to start seeing maybe a little bit of jockeying of these businesses moving to, if their lease is up and a business becomes available or a space becomes available in a locally owned business, they're looking to try and jump to be in more favorable situations for that. Main Street Steamboat is working with the Department of Local Affairs to see if they can get any help with rent relief for some of our tenants as well. And the other issue is that we're noticing a large amount of litter throughout downtown. Main Street Steamboat has always had a great volunteer base through the summers, but that base has always been around the 65-year-old and older age group. And so we're not seeing as much of that volunteer. So looking for some help in just getting some trash bags available to us, and we're going after other nonprofit organizations, schools for kids that need volunteer hours, and other Rotary Interact, other clubs that can help us beautify our city, continue to make it vibrant and welcoming. It is exciting to see the people downtown shopping, the energy that the city and county has provided for us to allow us to succeed in these troubling times. So thank you.
Thanks, Kathy. Next, I am providing the update for the Activity Companies Guides Outfitters Group, which is chaired by Jeff Daniels, the guest services director at Ski Area. The group had representation from activities such as zip lining, hot air ballooning, fly fishing, and others. Commissioner Corrigan, thank you for your participation on that committee. The group met once to discuss the needs of safe operations, best practices, capacity constraints, and regulations. And shortly after the group met, Governor Polis issued the Safer at Home and in the Vast Great Outdoors orders, which address most of their concerns of this group. Since that meeting, they have been approached by winter outfitters and see the need to apply summer lessons learned to winter operations. So we'll be continuing that conversation with the winter operations. Quick update from that group. Next, we have lodging. Barbara Robinson with the Holiday Inn and the chair of the Lodging Association is here to present.
Good morning, everyone. I want to start off with expressing how grateful we are to the commissioners. We think your diligence in allowing us to open and operate has really helped us to do so without any problems. Particular Commissioner Melton, thank you for always supporting us, helping us, being there for us, answering our questions. So we believe that we have been able to handle this summer without any problems is because of the strong mitigation plans that we put in place and also a very strong cleaning and disinfectant protocol. And that has helped. It also has helped in giving confidence to our travelers. They expressed to us they were kind of nervous in traveling. They weren't sure what to expect. And when they found a very prepared community that took safety and cleaning so seriously, it kind of helped them to feel comfortable. And I believe as an industry, we have successfully overcome that hurdle. So we have not discouraged the traveler from continuing to travel, especially as we look forward to the winter. Obviously, a successful winter is crucial for us. We were busier than projected in June and July, unfortunately at a much lower rate. That is always kind of the first that suffers. Although we learned in marketing, lowering rates doesn't increase demand, we still tend to use that as our first line of defense. We think the three reasons that we were busier definitely is a much heavier use by the second homeowners. One, they wanted to get away from where they came from. That's why they bought the second home in the first place. But also because they couldn't rent their units. So they saw that, well, they might as well then use it themselves. We still see strong commercial travel. In April and May, we would have called that essential travel. So that demand has continued. Whether that is because of construction, retail, just a general utilities, repairs, like people that are coming up here for projects. So commercial travel has stayed strong, and we see that more kind of as the Highway 40 hotels. That is probably not business that would have gone into the condos necessarily. And then, of course, lastly, the demand by a drive market guest to visit the great outdoors. Again, as I said, our cleaning standard makes us feel confident and has made the traveler confident for the winter. The several things that we need, sort of not to harp on what you already all know, we gotta have access to testing and a quicker turnaround for our winter guest. We have quite a bit of time between now and December to improve on that. So I hope that you as officials can help. Our challenge is probably we're missing the entry-level employees. So we don't know what the change in unemployment support will bring. Obviously, we need our citizens supported so that they can pay the rent. So we are obviously in favor of having them get support, but it also might challenge us to find entry-level employees. We have a lot of work ahead of us to recover from our lost rates. But we work closely with the ski area to see with our ski area, but also in general with our industries, to see what are other areas doing to prepare for successful winter travel and to make sure that we stay healthy and organized. So we have been meeting weekly, really strong participation. I don't know if that is necessary going forward unless any crisis ensues. I think we will probably go to more of a biweekly, if not even monthly. We're looking forward really to updates on unemployment and on how the PPP reimbursement rules have changed and how that impact us too for those that have gotten funds. All around, we are optimistic. We have not had any crises, and we're looking forward. We're all in this together. Let's bring a successful winter to move us forward into next year. Thanks.
Thank you. Hey, Kara, we're running a little bit long, but that's okay. I'm going to give you until 11 o'clock. So I'm sure. I think we're going to need that time for the balance of your updates.
Okay. Yep. Thank you. Appreciate it. Next up, we have Nick Sharp with the Rex's Family Restaurants. And Nick is also the chair of the Steamboat Springs chapter of the Colorado Restaurant Association.
Good morning, everybody. I'll keep my update short as Beth has been attending all of our meetings. I'm sure you're most aware. The restaurant industry is hurting right now. I'm pleased to hear a lot of optimism out of the other industry groups thus far this morning. I can't echo the exact same optimism. We're down sales-wise somewhere between 15 and 40%, even with expanded outdoor seating. And our staffing is similarly difficult, except 80% of our workers are entry-level, and so they are missing. That's weighing heavily on current employees. They're working
Nick, you're stalled, and you might try turning off your video. Might make your audio work better.
Long hours, their mental health is. We are incredibly in our occupants.
Hey, Nick. Why don't we pause on you for a second and see if maybe you can reboot, and we'll move forward to the next one and come back to you if that's okay.
See indoors?
What's that?
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
My apologies. We're incredibly limited on our indoor occupancy, and we are all very worried about what will happen in the fall. So our priority at the state level and at the county level is working on expanding our indoor occupancy ability. That is paramount number one task.
Thanks, Nick. I think you're stalled out again, but we did hear your desire to see indoor occupancy expanded as a priority, and we hear that loud and clear. Go ahead, Kara, to your next one.
Hey, Nick. We'll give you a second to see if we can have you maybe refresh and update in a minute. I will share via email the update on childcare and move forward to Betsy Grasby with the nonprofit industry work group.
Okay. I want to emphasize Barbara's, as Barbara stated, thank you so much for the job, the very difficult and excellent job you guys are all doing. I am on the nonprofits committee, and my logistical chair is Tim Wolgenot, who's the executive director of the Yampa Valley Community Foundation, which has been key, as well as we represent all of the nonprofits. In June, we've been meeting mostly monthly. In June, we sent out a survey to the nonprofits, and we received 53 responses of those doing business in Rock County. And what we found was it was an impact. And what we found was that the majority of, like half of these, more than half had received PPP funding, which was absolutely critical. Those who didn't receive it were too small. They didn't have employees to do that. Interestingly enough, we employed 171 full-time employees, and it's supplemented very strongly by volunteers, and that's been one of our major impact, putting huge stresses on our staffing, is that we have very few volunteers. As you know, the demographic is, the volunteers is traditionally the demographic as far as danger, so that's made a big impact. Some of these people have reduced their or laid off their staff, and there's been a big cutback, of course, in summer staffing. Interestingly enough, we did find that 3/4 of the nonprofits that responded had reserve funds, which is a great testament to this philanthropic community. And 2/3 of them expect to tap into their reserves, which could last, I mean, 29 organizations that would last anywhere from 1 month to maybe 6 months or more, which brings us to the point of the enormous concern. One of the major things we need, everyone stated, was funding and operating grants. We all are very nervous about 2021, as you are as well, and what the impact will be in funding to us, in services, and what happens in the future. Some of the huge impacts also were whether, like, we divided this into the funding categories from the, that the community funding comes from the city. So we really met with representatives from three groups, which was arts and culture, which actually makes up about 42% of the respondents, human resource coalition, as well as the environment. And there was definitely an increase in demand, of course, for our human resource coalition. And those arts and culture were just drastically affected by this shutdown, because so much of it is about presenting programs, people gathering together. One of the important things was meeting size, which you guys have addressed as best we can, and that also affected fundraisers. And that's been a huge impact. The normal way that we do fundraisers, most of those did not happen, and now we're all learning the technology and how we go virtual on those. And as we scramble to get this done, what we're finding is most of us have had some sort of decrease in the philanthropic fundraising, although others, you know, we're finding others have stepped up and are rather strong. But as I say, we're all very concerned about what's going to happen next year. So operating grant money is very important, as well as technology assistance. These nonprofits, 82% have operating budgets under $500,000. And we don't have full-time technology people online. And so technology grants, we'll need acquisition of equipment, training to enable us all to move into what our future is, where we are all being forced to go. Interestingly, we have been meeting weekly also with the Community Foundation as a leader of the nonprofits. Quarterly, all the executive directors of nonprofits are invited. We do a forum. And that is also taking on even more of an important role as far as what we do and how we move forward. We will we will continue to meet in our group. We don't know if that will be monthly or quarterly, but we'll be working very closely as well with the Community Foundation, with our executive director gathering. And one of the things too, as we all are concerned about our, you know, what will happen to our budgets, is our industry sectors particularly, we're starting to gather together to really brainstorm in smaller groups about how do we work more efficiently, where are our shared resources, how do we work together so that we can all do our services and come out stronger. So we're trying to be very proactive in how we do this differently, but continue with what's so important in the community. There you go. If there are any questions.
Thanks, Betsy. I'm going to hop.
You know, one more point that I would love to say in watching the two, what has happened from our little corner in the middle of Steamboat Springs is having a little bit of retail as well as having the museum. Last year at this time we had by this time we had 4,500 visitors through the museum. And this year we opened a month later, but we've had 800. However, on the corner, our store is doing exactly retail-wise what Kathy talked about, which is very good. And with 180 feet of sidewalk space here in the middle of town, yes, litter is a problem.
Thanks, Betsy.
Kara, I'm going to give you to 11:05 now.
Thank you. We're going to hustle through. We have three more. Next up, Ted Carey. He's on the board of the Free Summer Concert Series and has led the events, festivals, and tournaments group.
Thanks, Kara and everyone. I'll be brief so that Jen and Adana can present as well. I chaired the special events, tournaments, and festival group. Very big thanks to Commissioner Melton for joining all of our meetings. It was very helpful to have her there and her updated knowledge and insight. We also were joined by council member Michael Buccino, and we had an excellent group of local and regional event producers and support groups that represented a lot of the best, most iconic and economically significant events that we have here in Steamboat Route County. The public health crisis has decimated events, obviously. The very nature of large events is problematic. Most local events were canceled this summer or went to some sort of online format. Although there are at least a couple that are still shooting for later this year, this fall, I'm excited to see what happens. We're all certainly pulling for them and being supportive of anything they need. The work group produced a lot of valuable discussion about mitigation protocols and how to operate when it is time to do so. And the current and future paths forward. The biggest challenge, obviously, right now is gathering size. Many of the events represented in the group were designed to entertain hundreds, if not thousands, of guests. And obviously, those have been mostly ruled out by local health orders and common sense. Some of the short-term needs that we identified beyond gathering size was assistance from local government or the community with mitigation and policing that mitigation. This is very new. It's going to be complicated and costly for event producers to do that. Local support for events that were not able to execute this year and will need support going forward to restart. That is both logistical and financial support. Long-term, the group is focusing on what the event landscape looks like in Steamboat and Route County. It is certain, and I think it will become even more clear as we progress through this, how important events, festivals, and tournaments are for our economy. And this is an opportunity for us to realize that and focus on that impact and create a local environment that is inviting to events and inviting to excellent events and economically significant ones. To that effort, much discussion revolved around the possibility of a one-time or ongoing impact study so that local leaders and event producers have valuable data to make informed decisions about local events and what's right for the community. There was a lot of great discussion about the events around county. It is a very, very, very challenging industry to be in right now. And I think there will be some time to move some of these priorities forward while the realities of gathering size become more clear and progress. That was very quick, but thank you very much for having me today, and I'm happy to answer any questions if there's time for that.
Thanks, Chad. Jumping over to Jen Shea, she is with the Seaboat Ski Resort, and she was the lead for the weddings and groups industry workers.
Well, Ted, what a great lead-in. Good morning, commissioners. The Rouse County Weddings and Event Industry Sector Group began meeting under the guidance of the Chamber to carefully review the state and local guidance in the COVID era to craft recommendations to allow the group of wedding planners and venues to retain at least a small portion of the conferences and weddings on the books for our community. Commissioner Beth Melton and Councilman Michael Pacino were extremely helpful in providing guidance as we developed plans and identified the economic impacts with the loss of this business sector to our community. Weddings have been a low impact revenue driver to our community. Many were hosted at ranches and at resort venues with minimal disruption to our local community while providing significant room night revenue for our lodging community and jobs for our gig economy from florists to caterers. In the first week of June, we submitted a comprehensive proposal of mitigation plans and suggested gathering sizes for these events. With the guidance of the Chamber and the policy group, we made a last minute revision to the initial proposal from a progressive gathering size plan to a targeted number to reflect variance requests successfully submitted by other Colorado counties. That proposal was met with concern from our health department, so we revised the ask and brought it back to this group for consideration. Ultimately, the public health department submitted a variance request, but the timing did not work as the state saw increases in COVID cases and put variance reviews on hold this month. We've been able to retain a handful of micro weddings, new term, but have lost nearly all of our weddings and conferences for the summer through fall. We're optimistic that guidance for fall will come through to allow us to retain some remaining business on the books. As a result of this dismal short-term situation, we're pivoting to our long-term sector recovery. We may need relief and support from Rouse County to allow some of our ranch venues to host scheduled events in 2021 and book new business in excess of their current event caps. Our sector meets next week, along with John Bristol, to discuss the needs for a long-term recovery plan with the EDC. We look forward to bringing this great segment of sales tax revenue back to Rouse County in a safe and responsible manner. And we thank you for your ongoing support throughout this challenging time. Thank you.
Thanks, Jen. And last, we have Adonna Allen with Alpine Bank, leading the banking industry work group, who hears and from and supports all of the industries. Adonna.
Hi, guys. I'm not surprised that the banker went last. No one wants to hear from the banker. So we are definitely on a double-edged sword. On one side, anything having to do with residential is extremely busy. Residential construction loans for consumers, residential construction projects are still moving forward. Several of the banks are looking at large projects with the Yountville Housing Authority or private developers. So that's good news. Mortgage interest rates fell below 3% this year for a 30-year fixed, and 15-year fixed are almost at 2.5, which is unbelievable. So if you need to refinance, this is the time to do it. On the other hand, the banking industry is extremely concerned about our restaurants, retails, and nonprofits. We're already starting to see some of those show weakness. And if we don't have a turnaround shortly, there's going to be a lot of past due loans and problem credits on our doorsteps. The PPP loans, while people are wanting to ask for forgiveness, that portal has not even been opened up yet through the SBA. And there's currently legislation going through at the federal level to hopefully allow for automatic forgiveness on any credits of $150,000 or under, which would be fantastic. That would actually take care of most of, almost 75% of the loans in Rouse County. So that would be good news. But that federal PPP forgiveness will probably not even be open up for September or October at the earliest. So stay tuned. So that's it for me.
Thanks, Adonna. Commissioner Corrigan, thank you for the extra time. We really appreciate it.
I will hopefully quickly speak for all three of us in expressing our gratitude to you, Kara, for putting all of these groups together, and really expressing gratitude to everybody in the business community for your willingness to adhere with public health orders and to work very closely so that we can all work together to keep our businesses open, hopefully keep disease prevalence down so that we're not looking at taking a step back, and so that we can look forward to a successful ski season. So thank you all very much. And I guess I would at least provide the opportunity for Beth and Doug if they have anything quick they want to add.
Quick. So yeah, you know, we're moving into this new phase, protect our neighbor and whatever, and we need you guys as sales help and doing that as well. So that means all of us as the community and you guys as work groups to being part of that and being part of the tool that, you know, all of us being part of the, to figure out how that we can get that. And again, I echo what Commissioner Corrigan said, you know, it's going to take some due diligence. And the last thing, for all the hard work and everything everybody's been doing, the worst thing that we could have happen is we fall backwards, and then we end up having to fall backwards. And that's not any one of us want to have happen. So we just need to figure out how we can continue moving forward and shepherd up the things that we've been doing all along here. But anyhow, move into the next step as well.
Beth?
I would just echo all of the thanks to Kara and her team and all of you for the work that you've been doing. And I know that I have felt just so much pride in our community as I participate in these groups with you all, because I think we all recognize that we're on the same team. We're trying to accomplish the same things. And, you know, sometimes there we might have competing priorities, but we're all trying to move in the right direction. And I just really feel inspired by our community and the amazing work that all of you do. And so this is, I think we could all say this is one of the worst things, if not the worst thing, that has happened in our lifetimes and hopefully will be the worst thing that we have to deal with. And I'm just really impressed by the folks who have risen to this challenge. And I feel really privileged to live here with such great people all working together. So just would echo thanks, and we're gonna need more, you know, to get through this. So thank you to everyone, and look forward to continuing to do this. And I think this was really valuable to have updates from all these groups. I know we've participated, but hearing kind of this summary is incredibly helpful. So I hope we'll continue to do that in the future.
Great. Thank you all very much. See you later. All right, team, we're running a little bit behind schedule, but I think that was important to provide that extra time. But we now are going to move on to our YVRA public address system replacement. Julie Kennedy, are you here with us today? I do not see Julie. Do I? Maybe.
Kevin's here.
Oh, there's Kevin. Well, Kevin, that'd be great. Why don't you go ahead and let us know what we're doing here.
Okay, so we budgeted to replace our public address system throughout the terminal in 2019, and we went out with an RFP and we selected a vendor and a small business struggled to get bonded and then couldn't get bonded, and we ended up last year in 2019 cutting the cord with that vendor and then reissuing our RFP in 2020. And we got a bid back from Ford AV, big company, and it was through their office in Denver. So we are in the process of trying to get approval to contract them to do this work. It came in significantly over budget, but I would tell you that the PA system, both from a safety standpoint and an operation standpoint, is critical to our operations here and will be even more so this year. And so I've sat down with them. We've massaged their proposal. We've cut out some of the fat, if you can call it that. We're reusing some of the elements of our existing system. But even then, it's about $69,000 over budget. So I just don't think we can get through another season without replacing our PA system. It does include expanding it, obviously, with the new construction that we're doing this year and bringing the capability into the expanded ticketing area and into the new gate for Southwest. So obviously, we'll cover this. We're lucky enough that certainly CARES Act money for us allows us to spend it on this sort of thing, since it's not eligible for AIP funding. This will come right out of our CARES Act money. And so today's request is to approve the purchase of the PA system through Ford Audiovisual for the amount of $198,970.
Questions, comments, commissioners?
So, Kevin, you said you have money. I understand that for the CARES. So do we, this probably, in our motion, we will require a supplemental budget at a later time?
Yes. And in working with accounting, they expect that to be all rolled up at the end of the calendar year here. So we did not do a supplemental for this. They want to do them all at the end of the calendar year and one lump sum, I guess.
Sounds good. Thank you. I just want to make the point. So I'm good.
Kevin, can you help us understand why you were only able to procure one legitimate proposal?
Yeah, I don't know if it's, where we're advertising or the way the industry is right now. We had three firms that indicated they were going to bid and then really only got one valid bid at the end of the day. So they're a known quantity. The Ford AV took over our existing PA system. They didn't install the one now, but they're the ones that have kept it running since they bought out the company that originally installed it. So one good thing about having them is it's a known quantity to them. So I'm confident that they'll do a good job for us. So the only thing I don't like is obviously the price is significantly higher than we thought, but we're a year after and it's COVID-19 and I don't know if that's an excuse for a higher bid or not, but this is kind of what we got. So we're just lucky to have the funding to be able to absorb a delta like that in between our estimate and the actual quote.
Well, I certainly take at face value your assertion that this thing just has to be replaced and we do need to do the expansion into the new areas. So I'm comfortable moving forward.
Yeah, if evidence of that is that we have no spares for our microphones and you can't source them anymore. So we were actually down to the point where we were using bullhorns in the American gate for a significant amount of the time last season. And thankfully our ground handler was pretty good sports about it. And most of the people thought it was kind of curious, but went along with it. But we certainly need a better system than that, especially when you think about if you're trying to get some sort of emergency information out to all your passengers and going into this season where we fully expect tensions to be higher with our passengers, not lower. I think we absolutely need this system replaced.
I'm ready for a motion.
I can make a motion here once I open up the right screen. All right, Mr. Chairman, I move to approve. Sorry, the way this is written is a little weird. To approve the purchase of a YVRA public address system replacement, authorize you to sign the notice of award and authorize the county manager to electronically sign the purchase order to Ford Audio Video
Systems LLC in the amount of $198,970, noting that a supplemental budget will be required.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
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 Aye. Thank you very much, Kevin.
Thank you.
Keep up the good work out there.
All right, I will. Thanks.
All right, we have one last item on our agenda for today, an abatement correction. Do we have someone for, I see Susan is here from the assessor's office. Susan, are you gonna be presenting this? Or let me put that another way, Susan, you need to unmute yourself and present this, please. Maybe, Kendra, maybe you need to make a quick call down to the assessor's office. Oh, there's Devonna.
Yeah, I'm here. Oh, Susan's off mute now. Maybe she wants to speak. No?
Not, as the case may be.
Yep. All right, well, this is pretty quick anyway. It's a on our Tuesday abatement, we had a clerical error that we discovered after the hearing. The recommendation on the appraiser's report that Commissioner Melton read when she made her recommendation was incorrect. In the communication packet that you should have in front of you, we typed up the correct recommendation. The abatement hearing wasn't due to a valuation issue. It was a clerical issue, I mean, a classification issue. And so the value should have been the same for the actual value. The motion is to retain that actual value from 2018 and 2019.
I would move to, I understand.
Okay.
To correct the record to reflect the accurate assessor recommendation, which was accepted by the board on July 21st at our hearing as stated on the abatement petition. This was due to a clerical error and the correct recommendation. And sorry, this was in regards to account number R8170301. The correct recommendation should have read, retain the actual value of $575,000 for tax year 2018. And retain actual value of $676,500 for tax year 2019, change classification to residential for both years, decrease assessed value from $166,750 to $41,400 for tax year 2018, and from $196,190 to $48,370 for tax year 2019, and refund $6,255.44 in taxes for tax year 2018 and $7,819.36 in taxes for tax year 2019. So noting that the clerical error was in regards to the actual value, which was to be retained.
Correct.
Second.
Yeah, may have set a record for the length of a motion, but I think it's clear enough now. Thanks to the assessor's office for bringing this correction to us. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Yeah. Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Thank you very much, Devonna, Susan. All right, we have completed our posted agenda for the day. Is there anything else that we need to discuss before we adjourn?
I learned that my car will require $3,000 in repairs, so that's exciting. My apologies for stepping out, but...
that's kind of
one of mine.
What's that?
I know.
One of mine.
You know, it's funny though. It's a Subaru, and it's just one of those things where, like, if you just take care of it, they'll go forever. And it's at 130,000 miles. And so it's sort of like you either decide you're going to run it into the ground or you decide you're going to just replace it. So we're on the run it into the ground strategy.
Always a good one.
But I did want to make sure I didn't miss anything in that discussion that was critical. I don't know if there were, sorry, I had to step away for a minute because I know you guys were talking about staffing and just making sure the weekend is covered and communication. So we're good.
Yeah, okay. I think we're good. Okay. I think Mark and Kathy are going to be on top of it. And again, I just, and Robin as well. So yeah, I think sounds like we're good.
Okay.
It's always kind of gets in one of those things, you know, as you would say, we hate to micromanage it at the commissioner level too much, but we just want to make sure somebody's got the ball and they're running with the ball. So,
yeah, I agree with you, Doug. I mean, we don't want to be in the weeds on it, but at the same time, there's so many moving parts and they're just, it's more than, you just want to make sure balls aren't getting dropped and you couldn't blame anyone for dropping a ball in this scenario, but it doesn't hurt to just have all hands on deck and making sure we're covering our bases.
Wow. I think we've used enough sports analogies that everyone understand where we're headed.
You feel sufficient? No balls being dropped. All hands on deck.
You don't have football or hockey or basketball, anything. So forget what all of that's about.
Well, I think we hit this one out of the park. So Mark,
there you go, Tim.
Mark, do you have anything for us? I know that actually you're leaving right away, aren't you? Or you're heading up to...
I'll be leaving later this evening, Tim. But again, as I mentioned in my note to you, thanks for the allowance. This came up kind of quickly, but good news in terms of being able to take care of a property, and I'm very appreciative. But I'll have my cell phone, and I'll do my best to check in on our meetings. But again, I may be knee-deep in boxes.
All right. Good luck with all of that.
Congratulations and good luck.
Yep. Anything else, team, or are we ready to adjourn?
I assume Roberta will join us not till next Wednesday. Us being the commissioners.
Commissioners, if you're interested in have, I would say Monday is going to be probably really, really super busy for her. So, and I know she's slated for Wednesday. So if you want to see her Tuesday, we could have her chime in and join. But if you're okay with Wednesday, I think that might be the best under the circumstances.
I think meeting us is low priority, but I just wanted to, she has plenty to do to check in.
And Tim will get to meet her on Monday on the field visit.
Very good.
Right. And I met her on the interview. So.
Very good. Thank you all very much. Oh, by the way, I have no idea what this is about, but Don Cook wants to speak with me this afternoon. So we're going to be having a telephone call, and I will, if there's anything of any real importance, I will email you with whatever. He hasn't given me no hint what it is that he wants to talk about. So I'll find out.
Oh, God, man of mystery.
Yes, indeed. So, right, thank you all very much. We will see you on.
I have one last thing, Mark. And if you could, you know, you guys are going to go tour that place on Monday. If you have a, you know, the schedule number of that property or something, you could email that to us. We could pull that property up on our GIS, and it would help me kind of just the location of it. We don't need to let it out right now or whatever, but I would, you know, and I know the assessor's office has got the, you know, the scoop on it and everything. We can just pull it up off the assessor's record. So, and thank you guys for doing all that. And that sounds like a good plan. So
we'll do.
Thank you.
All right. Let's adjourn. See you on Monday.